shore.
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Gene right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
It's about 9 o'clock now, central time, which means that if we set them up and turn them on right now, they'd run until about noon tomorrow.
Does thunderstorm activity appear to consolidate around that eye?
That is storm surge from the Atlantic Ocean, the overwash coming in.
You're listening to Stories from the Hurricane Highway, the weekly podcast series that takes an in-depth look back at over two decades of tracking hurricanes, technology, behind-the-scenes stories, and much more. I'm your host, Mark Suddeth. So glad you could join me, and thank you for supporting this exclusive podcast via Patreon. Hello again, and welcome to another edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. So glad you could join me. It is Wednesday, January 6, 2021, and with that, Happy New Year to you. Yep, the first Wednesday in January here that I'm uploading this episode. Hey, look, I'm very excited to tell you that I will be joined by Mike Watkins during this episode. I was finally able to pin him down, and we spoke over Zoom audio. I'm going to bring him in just a little bit as we talk about Tropical Storm Arlene, mainly the first landfalling storm of the very busy 2005 season. We're going to get to that in just a little bit. And that's what the topic of most of this episode will be about. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about what I was doing on this whole hurricane awareness campaign with Lowe's and Sprint. Well, as you are aware, starting in 2001, I began a partnership with Lowe's Home Improvement Stores and eventually later in 2001 with Sprint. And the idea was to have a national hurricane awareness campaign with both companies, whereby, as an example, with Lowe's, I would visit their stores during these hurricane awareness events, working with the local Red Cross chapter, local emergency management officials, the media would come out, and we would just talk hurricanes, talk to their customers, maybe some of the vendors of, you know, generator sales, storm panels, and other supplies. Those vendors would be there, and we would answer questions. I was the on-site resident expert about hurricane hazards, where to get pertinent information. You know, we had the Chevy Tahoe all decked out with the Lowe's logo on it and the Sprint logo on a couple of the windows. And it was a conversation starter. You know, we'd have the Tahoe out front and it looked like, you know, something out of the movies. And it was just a good way to draw people in, get them talking about hurricanes. And I really admired Lowe's perspective that they wanted an educated customer. You know, they didn't want to sell a customer a $1,500 generator if all they needed was a $700 generator. And that's a true story. They wanted me there to help explain to their customers how to best prepare. It's not about spending as much money as possible. Lowe's wanted an informed customer, and that really made me feel good about being part of the program. I mean, I was essentially in charge of it. You know, it was my program that their community relations side funded. And as I said, I got to travel over a good deal of the country doing these. And the same was true generally with Sprint. But Sprint, of course, being a telecom, it's different. So I would visit their call centers, maybe the network switches, and talk with some of their engineers. And even in the larger cities, New Orleans, Tampa, Orlando, Raleigh, North Carolina, I would visit with some of the salespeople, maybe corporate sales. And it was nice because I could meet with people in small groups, 5, 10, 20, 50 people at the most, and really help answer questions, you know, do PowerPoint, and even meet with some people one-on-one to be able to answer specific questions, especially if someone was new to a hurricane-prone area. And it was, you know, unlike anything that any other companies were doing. To my knowledge, nobody else had anything like this, and it was a lot of fun to do this. So that brings me to where we are during this first full week of June in 2005. As we know, the 2005 Atlantic hurricane season ended up being extremely busy. It was what we call hyperactive. We had a total of 28 storms and 15 hurricanes. Seven of those hurricanes were major hurricanes. We had four Category 5 hurricanes that year. I mean, it was absolutely incredible and still stands. In terms of overall impact with the likes of Katrina and Rita and Wilma and others, of course, those were the three big ones. 05 still pretty much stands alone as the single biggest impact season of the modern era. And it all started off right there in the month of June with a tropical storm in the Gulf of Mexico. The first name that year was Arlene. So I was down in Florida all of the first week of June working with Sprint, working with Lowe's, as part of this big hurricane awareness campaign that I had mentioned there that we were doing with both companies. And I was in touch with Jesse, of course, and Mike Watkins, who was brand new to the team. We were monitoring things, keeping on top of things. You know, I was writing up blog posts for HurricaneTrack.com. And yes, even back 15 plus years ago, the computer models were pretty good. We had access to the GFS. Interestingly enough, though, in 05, there was no tropical tidbits. There was no pivotal weather. There was no WeatherBell, WeatherModels.com, you name it. We actually used the INSEP site, you know, the National Centers for Environmental Prediction, and it was just the raw output straight from the U.S. government website there. No fancy graphics like we have now. No Madden-Julian oscillation, upward motion. Green is positive for development. Orange and red is negative for development kind of stuff. I mean, we were a little bit handicapped compared to where we are 15, 16 years later. But we were certainly still able to keep on top of it, make no mistake. And in that process, I would every day, just like I do now, take a look at the overall global model picture, usually looking at the GFS, the Global Forecast System, looking at what the National Hurricane Center was saying, and I would read sort of the consensus of what people were thinking through this message board where we discovered Mike Watkins from, and that was storm2k.org. You go in there and you can read about different topics, and it was very easy to keep up with any developments in the tropics. And so as that first week of June kind of progressed, you know, I'm working in Florida, visiting different places with Lowe's and Sprint, got a busy tour schedule, if you will. And all the while, it looks like something is going to try to develop coming out of the Caribbean Sea, maybe up into the Gulf of Mexico, favoring the central to eastern part of the Gulf, perhaps. And we were going to start things off, you know, right out of the gate, right there in early June, with Tropical Storm Arlene. So as I wrapped up my activities and public appearances and in the Orlando area and the rest of Central Florida, I was talking with Watkins, that's what we call him, Mike Watkins, and said, hey, look, why don't you come with me and let's go over to the panhandle. Who knows where Arlene's gonna, you know, Arlene to be is gonna end up. That's the general area what the models are showing. Maybe 40, 50 mile per hour tropical storm is what it seemed like. Not a real big problem, not a big impact event. Just kind of a way to ease into the hurricane season, it seemed. And this would be a good first field mission for Mike to join me with. And you got to remember, while I'm in Florida doing all these awareness tours and public appearances and so forth, I'm driving the famous Chevy Tahoe, the Hurricane Track flagship vehicle, with all the bells and whistles on it. It's got the roof-mounted anemometer, the camera systems, you know, it looks like something out of a movie. You guys, most of you, I'm sure, have seen pictures and video of the old Tahoe. And so I was prepared. I mean, there could be a hurricane the next day, and I would be ready to go. I had everything I needed with me. Unlike how things are 15-plus years later, there was not a lot to pack and get ready, because it wasn't until later in the 2005 season that I would begin to have unmanned cameras and other stuff. We're going to get to that. So it was fairly easy to just deploy and go somewhere because the Tahoe still, right there in early June, was the method of data collection. Any wind readings, I was going to get it from the Tahoe. Pressure readings, we'd do it ourselves, driving the Tahoe into the centers of tropical storms and hurricanes. You know, we did that certainly in 2004, learned the hard way how frightening that can be with Charlie. And we were still doing that in the early part of 05. So Mike said, yep, sure, I'm available and I can come up and I can help out. And I was like, cool, why don't you come on up to the Orlando area and we'll figure out some place that we can put your car. You can ride with me in the Tahoe and we will head on over to the Panhandle or maybe as far west as Mississippi. Who knows? And Mike was living down in Coconut Creek, down in Broward County, just kind of central Broward County at the time. So he agreed to make the trip up. And we tackled Tropical Storm Arlene together. So let's bring in Mike. As I said, I talked to him recently over Zoom audio, and here's what we discussed. All right, I'm very happy to finally bring into the podcast series Mike Watkins, who is living now 10 minutes from the Fort Lauderdale airport. That's what he tells me. So I knew you, we met, kind of rewind the clock a little bit. Jesse and I came down to the National Hurricane Center in early 2005, and I know I already went over this in a previous episode, but we'll let Mike kind of tell his side of the story. Jesse and I had come down, and we wanted to kind of scout you, and so we said, hey, we're doing this seminar at the National Hurricane Center. Why don't you come by, and we kind of want to talk to you about some stuff because we wanted you in our little club. If we can call it that. Remember that?
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely remember it.
Yeah, because you were doing the internet radio, as we call it. Now everybody does it, and there's multi-billion dollar contracts for it. Why didn't you get a multi-billion dollar contract?
I don't know. I mean, we were doing, we had Skype hooked up to a phone at some point, and we were doing audio where people, you know, we could get people to call in to a phone number, and we put it out on the internet. At one point, Adam Curry, we had a meeting with him about how we did it because he was trying to figure out how to do the podcasting. So it's crazy that we're doing in 2021 almost the exact same thing we were doing in 2004, just different technology.
Right. But right,
it's amazing.
And now it's literally become a multi-billion dollar industry with podcasts. And so here we are. But yeah, I mean, we knew Mike from Storm 2K. M. Watkins, and everybody loved it when he came in and posted something this mysterious. Remember, I thought you were like a 500-pound guy from Atlanta, that whole weird, like, I just had this vision that you were this giant man that lived in Atlanta for some reason. And you're like, no, not at all. I'm 300 pounds at the time, and I live, no, you weren't that big, but.
I was big, 250, I think, right. At the peak.
Weren't we all? I've been there, done that. But seriously, we got to know Mike because of Storm 2K and really liked his style, a very no-nonsense way of posting stuff on this message board. And then he started this Talking Tropics program. And who were some of the people behind that? It was, what was it, Dr. Oliver? Was that Steve Oliver?
Yeah. Steve Oliver. He engineered that whole thing. I mean, right. He put it together. We're using software that gamers use to communicate to each other, and that we called that the virtual studio.
Right.
And so Steve and Javon
Mascolino.
He was my producer. he was pretty relentless. So we pretty much got anybody we wanted because he'd just keep following up until they finally agreed to come on the show, which was great because we got to talk to everybody. Gosh. And you were
one of the first guests on this. This network, this radio show, what's now is a pod internet radio, that it could have been worth $1 billion. We just somehow missed the boat. Oh well, I digress. But yeah, those were the exciting times, man. I mean, that was 04 into 05. But Jesse and I really liked Mike's demeanor, his intelligence level. He was very mature. I mean, we can all goof off and sort of behind the scenes stuff. And we do, we all have a good sense of humor, but when it mattered, you know, his matter of factness and non-hype way of talking about things, his interview style on his internet radio show was remarkable. And I wanted to bring in somebody new, and we really liked Mike. And so Jesse and I went down to Florida, drove down there and put on this seminar, went out to, we probably went to Outback, didn't we? I mean, back then that's all I ate, that and like Chick-fil-A. Now it's Cheesecake Factory, but.
Yeah, it was definitely Outback.
It was definitely Outback. We took Mike out, and I want to say it's kind of like offering him a job, but that's not really what it was. It was a spot on the team, so to speak, because the Hurricane Track brand and what we were doing was rising pretty quickly amongst the ranks of everything. The Hurricane Center was starting to endorse what we were doing. Max was slowly warming up. Max Mayfield, the director at the time, we were doing good stuff, and we wanted Mike's input. And I even said, hey, look, it'd be great if you could go out in the field one day with us and help out there. And we thought about what we could do back with Storm 2K and the Talking Tropics thing. We could do some internet radio stuff out in the field too. And so it was this mutually beneficial sort of wheel that we had constructed between Hurricane Track, Storm 2K. And what was the internet radio network that y'all had? Do you remember the name of that?
Yeah, it was IPR 365. So it was Internet Public Radio. So it was abbreviated IPR 365. So,
that's right. And we just thought this would be a really good fit. We're right there at the beginning of the 05 season. I specifically remember on your Talking Tropics show, Jesse and I were on the way to the National Hurricane Conference, and you had Chris Lanzi on there, Dr. Chris Lanzi, and you asked him, do you think we could have an El Nino this year? I don't know if it was those exact words. And I remember this is April, and he said, we could have an El Nino. And yet at the beginning of 05, did you think that it would end up, how rare is a season like 2005, especially in April? And think about how much stuff's changed. There could be an El Nino, and there was hardly anything close to that. It wasn't a La Nina, but that season surprised a lot of us, didn't it?
It did, and especially on the heels of what up to that point was an unprecedented 2004 season with Ivan and all the long track hurricanes that we dealt with. And so just the idea that we'd have another season that would be even more active, relatively speaking, I didn't think that. And that's around the time that we're kind of learning that there was a predictability barrier in April. And once you get through May and into June, then you kind of have an idea of which way El Nino is going to go. And so we were kind of thinking, it can't be nearly as active, but the Atlantic was warm. I remember that. And the Pacific wasn't really heating up.
Right. It's more warm neutral, if I recall.
Yeah. And that persisted. In fact, I think we had a mini El Nino that year that kicked in, but maybe that was 04. I don't remember. But I do remember, and it was funny on that interview, actually, I mispronounced his name right out of the gate because I'd never heard it before. I'd only read it. So he corrected me, and that's how my interview career started. But yeah, that was I don't think anyone saw I remember in the mid August, a lot of experts were saying this upper pattern is unfavorable. It's probably going to be a quiet hurricane season, and up until really that first burst that we got late, that's when it took off, and then everyone realized we were up against.
Right.
And even crazier season than 2004.
Right. And you knew it once it was happening. That's what was weird about it. How things have changed in 15 years, but we'll talk about 2020 way on down the road. But 05, we knew it was going to be busy, relatively speaking. Dr. Gray, who was the lead author on the Colorado State forecast back in the day, the late William Gray, he and his team, which included a young Phil Klotzbach, very young, probably a teenager back then, close to it, surely. Him and some of the other, was Blake still at Colorado State then? He was on the team, I think. I don't know.
I think he was, or he had just left, but was still doing contributing to research before he got landed at the Hurricane Center.
Colorado State and tropical storm risk. Those are the two main ones at the time that were reputable. We're looking at a pretty active season, and it didn't look like it was going to be below normal. Things finished up in Orlando with a Lowe's Hurricane Fair and a couple of sprint talks that I had to do. And I was going to head home, but then all of a sudden it looked like something was going to develop out of the Caribbean and move up towards the Florida Panhandle, maybe even the Central Gulf Coast. And that was, again, around that first week of June there. And I talked with Mike. I said, hey, we got this storm brewing. You know, the first name out of the gate for 05 is Arlene. You want to go with me? And Mike said,
I'm in.
Let's do it. Yeah. He said, yeah, let's go. So I finished up over probably the weekend. The Lowe's Hurricane Fairs were always on the weekend, Saturday. And then I'd probably chill out Sunday. Maybe there was another one Sunday. I don't remember those details. But Monday of that week, which would have been like June the 6th, I probably went and talked to a sprint, you know, call center or whatever. Mike, I guess you, that's the first time that you would have driven up. And here's what's funny. You're going to get to hear the place name Lake City quite a few times over the next few months as we go through this season two of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. So Mike was living in the western part of Broward County, and so he would drive up to Orlando. We met up and probably drove up the turnpike or something over to I-75. I don't know Florida that well. And then we left his car at Lake City. I think we went to the hospital there and said, okay, let's you know, go in, talk to somebody. Let's just leave his car out in the parking lot in Lake City. He'll ride with me. Because we were going to head over to probably, I don't know, it looked like Pensacola, maybe, Destin, possibly Gulf Shores, Alabama, that region for Tropical Storm Arlene. So this was the first time of many times that we would leave Mike's car at the hospital in Lake City, Florida. That became our jumping off point.
And, you know, it was always exciting to leave the car and go west to the right. Hurricane, and then coming back home was always really tired by the time we got to Lake City. Yeah. Still had a 7 or 8 hour drive home.
Yeah, there's always like a big adrenaline spike, you know, oh, there's a mission, we're going to do some stuff. And you got to understand, it didn't look like Arlene was going to be that strong. And the National Hurricane Center, on the very first discussion of Arlene, which was June the 8th, looked like it would peak out at about 60 miles per hour or so. Not too bad. So at least Mike's first field mission with Hurricane Track, you know, was not going to be insane. So it was cool. It's all right, you know, and especially for the area that it was headed to, Arlene in the Central Gulf Coast, where Ivan, you know, just a few months earlier, really, we're talking about September 14th, 15th of 04. It's not that long. What is that, 9 months later or something like that, that Arlene's coming? So we did the long trek. And you remember that, you know, Lake City to anywhere across the Florida Panhandle is just, they lie, don't they? The mileage on the Panhandle is just complete BS.
It's for every 1 mile marker is actually 2 miles. So I believe right. It's 600 miles from Lake City to Pensacola.
That's exactly right. It's the only place in the world that they do that. And we still don't know why. It's nothing through there. It's just I-10 and thick pine forest and a few rolling hills. And that's it. And then all of a sudden, 6 hours later, after leaving Lake City, you're in Pensacola and you're exhausted. And you still have to get through, well, at least from that point, you're excited about being in Alabama.
Right. Or even, you know, because I-10 comes down there pretty close to the coast. And, you know, I remember we're going through the Mobile Tunnel. It's like, this will flood one day from a big hurricane. And
sure.
And so there's a lot more. It's like you're back in civilization after yeah. that. Yeah.
The trek across the Panhandle is always just brutal. But we made it. We stopped in the Destin, Navarre Beach area for Arlene. And I'm going to play a couple of sound clips here in a minute and kind of, you know, take you guys back. And remember, so in 2005, we were going to be able to do live video. And we did a little bit during Arlene, but not much. We were still doing these, what we call look lives, where I would introduce it. And at least in this case, Mike was coming along and he would hold the camera. And so I would stand in front of the camera and do one of these.
Back in a very familiar location, we're in Gulf Shores, Alabama. Mike, if you'll pan up the beach, you can see the condominiums up there go all the way up to the side there. Look at that. This pipe here, they're trying to put back sand on the beach. The wind is picking up. The Gulf of Mexico is very angry today. It looks a lot like it looked on September the 15th when I was here for Hurricane Ivan, but it's not nearly as bad as you can imagine. With Arlene being only a tropical storm, there's a few people out here sightseeing. In this particular situation, it's not too dangerous, which is good. People are interested in the weather like this. Fortunately, Arlene is not as strong nearly as Hurricane Ivan was.
And so you remember that, Mike? You know, we stood out. There was like, it was like a really crappy hotel in Navarre, I think it was, that we stayed in. And I remember they had storm surge from Ivan, and you could see the rust level, the water level on like the columns, because we had an outdoor corridor. Do you remember that? It was like this sort of musty, they hadn't quite recovered all the way. You could see the high watermark from the rust line on all the columns of the steel beam.
Moldy smell. And right. And that's the other thing, because you were there, right? So, and certainly I'd seen the documentation and the different, you know, your the show and the video on disc, but I was surprised by all of the damage that was still not taken care of. I mean, there were just debris piles everywhere,
right?
And the surge lines, and it's like, you know, we know Ivan, even as it was weakening, was still a massive hurricane. But until you see that kind of stuff, it's hard to, you know, and that was my first time I've seen something at that scale. It really helped put into perspective what we were, you know, what we were really up against.
Mike and I were excited. It was great to work with him. I do remember, and let's see if you can remember this, and I still see it in my head, and it's probably easy because we actually filmed. We called these video updates, by the way. You remember that? Hey, Mike, we got to do a video update. We're in Destin, somewhere around there, and you know, Highway 98. And I remember it was the first night that we got there. We were tired. We had done that 600-mile trek from, just kidding, Lake City to Pensacola. And so we were down there along the panhandle somewhere, and we were hungry. And I remember I was like, hey, there's a Papa John's. Let's go get some Papa John's. You like Papa John's? I'm like, sure. So went to Papa John's, and I'm telling you, people, I can still taste it even today because we were so tired, so hungry. So yeah, we had this pizza for supper out in front of Papa John's, and one of the video updates was done right there, that I would post these videos on hurricanetrack.com. Mike became the cameraman. He would hold the camera, and I would do my video update. You know, hey, I'm Mark Seddeth. We're standing out here in front of whatever, and, you know, X, Y, and Z is happening. And so now you can record something like that, and we skip ahead 15 years. And, of course, it can be live. We understand that. But even now, you record a video, and it can be on social media. And if you have a big enough following, 30,000, a million, 10 million people, whatever, you guys know how this works. That can be on a recording. 90-second recording can be in front of the globe inside of 5 minutes. It took 5 minutes back then just to get the Firewire cable to mesh with the Vio and the Windows thing going ba-bong, ba-bong. Oh, man, you remember that sound? Because yes. It was ba-bong, you're good. Oh. And the down one, ba-bong, you're bad.
Yeah, I still hear it in my sleep.
Right.
Yeah.
You had to digitize the video out of the camcorder. I had a Digital 8 back in June of that year. I was going to upgrade eventually. We're going to get to that. I had a Digital 8 Sony camcorder and had a Firewire port. And so Mike would record these updates. And most of the time I'd get it in one take. Sometimes I would screw up. And it's a shame those tapes, who knows where they are, the originals with bloopers and outtakes. Gosh, that would be great to find someday. But alas, whatever. But it took forever to download that stuff because I'd have to capture it in, wait for it, real time. Like, play it back. If I talked for a minute and a half, 2 minutes, whatever, I had to capture it in real time using Dazzle or something. No, it's just whatever was built into the Firewire. I don't even know. It would capture it, though, as Windows Media Video. I do remember that. And then I'd have to FTP it to the server and then go in and edit the file, the index file, add the file in there, and it would take a half hour if you were lucky. So what we would do is we would shoot these video updates and then oftentimes get something to eat and eat our food while the thing was uploading. How about that for, you know, that's how things were back then.
Yeah, I remember when you got the point where you could edit the things together in Windows Movie Maker, I think. Right. It was probably beyond that point. So we were just kind of doing a live take and that was that one segment. And then later we were able to edit it into have more than one shot in there.
Right.
And again, not to get ahead, but I remember there were a couple of times where it took hours to upload.
Yes. We'll come to that. So there we are in the panhandle of Florida for Arlene, not too threatening a storm. It looks like we're probably a little too far east for the most effects. And so we spent the night in Navarre, somewhere around there, Navarre Beach. And then the next day, Thursday the 9th or so, maybe Friday the 10th, somewhere around there, we went on over to Gulf Shores, Alabama. And, you know, that is where I was, of course, for Ivan. And that is where Mike really got to see the aftermath of Ivan still so evident everywhere you looked. Kind of talk about that a little bit, Mike, as we went down, I think it was Highway 59 into Gulf Shores. It's 49 into Gulfport. We'll get there. Another episode. But we come down 59, and I think it's 182 that goes east-west, the main boulevard there, Gulf Shores, Orange Beach. That was pretty remarkable, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I remember we had to go around the main bridge in Pensacola to get over there.
Right. Because
that was out. It was down to one lane, or I think it was even out at that point. They hadn't repaired it yet. And as soon as we kind of came down from the interstate, and this was pretty much everywhere on that corridor between Pensacola and Gulf Shores, come off the interstate, and almost immediately you'd see that something had happened. You know, maybe there's a metal building
zone. Yes.
Yeah. And then as you get a little bit further south, then you'd start to see significant structural damage. And then even maybe like halfway to the ocean, now you're starting to see the extent of the surge and how far inland it got.
Right.
I remember it really clearly. I mean, that was the story of 05, you know, because we revisit a lot of places that were hit in 04 and hadn't come back or recovered yet. And certainly Gulf Shores and that Pensacola area was one of them. But I remember, that bridge being out. And even when they repaired it, was still an hour wait to get across it.
Right. And it's like they built it out of Legos. It was just like, oh, my goodness. It's the weekend coming up. That Arlene is going to impact the Central Gulf Coast there. And they actually put a hurricane warning up at one point there as Arlene strengthened and actually made it up to 70 miles per hour. And we were thinking, oh boy, this could be a little bit more impactful. So we made our way down to Gulf Shores and, you know, kind of just did our thing, you know, kind of roamed around, got some wind readings on the Tahoe, took some video here and there. And then down to the west of Gulf Shores is Fort Morgan. And all of this area there's no dunes. You know, Ivan flattened everything, including many buildings. And I got out into that area. I remember Mike stayed in the Tahoe because it was raining. And he's like, nah, I'm good. I'm gonna stay in here. It's nice and warm and dry.
dry.
And I'm like, I'm going to get out and go film some stuff. You know, we don't have remote cameras yet. I'm still working on them that year. It's not, they're not quite ready yet. So if I want to film something dramatic, I got to do it myself. And I'm telling you, folks, I again, those memories that you can just, I don't care. It could be 50 years from now. I could still remember it like it was yesterday. Going out into the, to these houses, the overwash was coming in and the Gulf was so warm, it felt like bath water. I know many times we go on the Outer Banks, even the beaches here, Wrightsville Beach, and you know, elsewhere along the Carolina coast, the water comes in, it's 80, 81, 82 degrees, and it's a little bit of, whoo, you know, it's a kind of a shock to the system, you know, because you're 98 degrees, and that cooler water, 82 at the most, usually, yeah, it's kind of a shock, right? Not so in Arlene. I will never forget when those waves would come up, they come up over my waist, that it was inviting like a bath. Just like, wow, it was so warm. That Gulf water already in early June was 85, 86, 87 degrees. And it was actually cold to get back in the Tahoe, you know, with the air conditioning running and whatnot.
And then the cold rain too.
Right.
So the right. Rain was colder than the water.
Right. Cause you know, most tropical cyclones when they come in are going to be around 79, 80 degrees. But the water temperature can be significantly warmer. I will never forget how warm that water was. We managed to get some pretty good point of view shots of big waves coming in, a little bit of overwash coming up on there on Highway 182, the Fort Morgan area.
Right over here is Highway 182. There's the Chevy Tahoe. We're hoping that the water does not get across the highway. That could be very bad. And right offshore this way, Tropical Storm Arlene. Uh-oh, here we go. Surge coming in here, buddy. Tropical Storm Arlene, the center of it is just offshore.
Did we go by the Gulf Shores Police Department and say hi to them? I'm sure we had to. Bill Cowan and all the guys that I had met for Ivan. I can't remember. I think we would have.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if that was... I remember specifically, it's like we don't, you know... We'd rather you guys not show up down here.
Yeah.
We understand why you're here.
You again, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's you. That's great.
Right.
But yeah, and actually, the father of one of the guys on the message board from Storm 2K was a police chief in Gulf Shores.
Oh, that is right. That's,
or was he police chief?
He was he was on the force.
He was on the force. He was at least a detective.
Right. Yes. Yeah, but Chief back then was Chief Bourne. I can't remember his first name.
Oh, yep.
Jason Bourne's dad. Not just kidding. you had it right. It was somebody's dad, but it was Jason Bourne's dad.
Jason.
Right. Yep. Who went on to make a whole bunch of action movies later on.
Yeah, who would have known back in 05 that was
yeah, right.
That was going to turn out.
Yeah, it was Chief Bourne back then. And we did. We had some really good friends there in Gulf Shores. And anytime we came in, they were just like, you know, well, you know, we love you guys. It's great to see you, but damn it. Right. You just knew. It's the Jim Cantore effect.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, Arlene was Mike's first one out of the gate with me. Not too eventful. You know, it wasn't a major problem, kind of a nuisance though over the weekend. Not good for the economy. Nobody likes a tropical storm on the weekend. I don't know when you like them, but you know, it's not, especially on top of Ivan just 9 months earlier or whatever. But we finished up over in Destin, back on our way to Lake City, you know, another 600 miles eventually to get to Mike's car. And I did one of those video updates kind of on purpose out in front of my other favorite restaurant at the time. Do you remember what that one was?
Steak and Shake?
Nah.
There was
that's close.
Red Lobster.
Red Lobster.
Yes.
Yep. I remember I had you purposely have that behind me because after the video update was recorded and I edited it, captured it, didn't edit it yet, but captured it and was uploading it. Oh, well, we got about an hour while that uploads. Why don't we go into
head on in.
I'm not kidding, folks. You might start thinking, gosh, there's an awful lot of talk about going to restaurants. When we were uploading these videos, you had to have something to do. So many times, I'm not joking, I would center uploading a video on the laptop around going and getting something to eat in a sit-down restaurant, Outback, Red Lobster, whatever, having a Papa John's in front of, you know, the Papa John's restaurant. Doesn't matter. It gave us something to do. And so it sounds funny, but, you know, it would take, so those early modems from Sprint were like 50 to 70K, and that's kilobits per second.
Yeah.
Tops.
Arlene was a good run through in a lot of ways because, you know, I learned in that first run through how to interact with the media, how we uploaded videos, how we did the shots, how we got information and processed it in real time and responded to it in the field. And kind of all of these things, you know, like don't get out of the truck right. when the AC is on with the VHS recorder, cause it'll seize up for,
oh yeah, or, that's right.
Don't open the door.
And with the wind to your back. Right.
Right. Yeah. All those things. I made mistakes as we went through, but at least, you know, it wasn't a huge storm, but it was instructional. And I kind of learned what life is like in the field as opposed to, you know, being at my computer or experiencing a storm that came in, you know, to where I live and preparing for it in a totally different way. It was a new world. So it was a good run through that way.
Right. It was a good wet run. Cause it was wet. Tropical storm Arlene. Yes. Well, there's our look back at the first landfall of the 2005 season, Tropical Storm Arlene. Really nice to talk with Mike Watkins and have a look back, a couple of laughs along the way at that first event of the very historic 05 season. Believe me, we're going to have a lot more stories from Mike over the weeks and months ahead as we plow through this very busy 2005 season. Next week, it'll be a short edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway because we're going to talk about a very specific and rather funny story from the Lowe's Hurricane Fairs. One was in Pensacola. Mike was going to handle that one for me. Talk about trial by fire, you'll see. And then I was in Foley, Alabama, and we'll wait and get into that next week as we talk about that. And again, it's a very, we can look back now and laugh because you'll see, it's quite funny. But yes, indeed, Mike is going to be back as we talk about going forward, eventually Hurricane Katrina at the end of August, and Mike's role with that, very, very important. So truly wonderful to have Mike join me, and I really appreciate that. All right, well, that will do it for this edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. As always, it is just wonderful to be able to produce these for you all, our supporters on Patreon. Spread the word. Tell other people about what we're doing. We have the podcast. We have the original series, the Hurricane Highway, all sorts of other stuff as we wait for the weather action to pick up in the off season, or if it's during the season, hurricane coverage. I dare say no one does it better than us, and it's wonderful to have you being a part of it, and to have your support means a tremendous amount to me, the rest of my team, my family, of course. So a huge thank you once again for making this a part of your life, and it really does give me a sense of fulfillment to be able to give you these retrospectives that are not available anywhere else. So thanks again for supporting all of that. Well, that'll about do it for me. I am Mark Suddeth, your host of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. As always, thanks for tuning in. We will gather again around the old campfire and talk some more again in about a week.